This is the third lesson in a series of lessons on goals. How to set them and how to demonstrate them. How to experience the deepest, most beautiful desires that have ever risen to the surface of your mind. As a matter of fact, how to call forth into your consciousness desires that yesterday would have been unbelievable to you. How to let your dreams become realities, become actual living experiences now. Harold Sherman wrote, "And yet, beyond the remarkable workings of your own thought processes and residing in some incomprehensible manner as a part of your own subconsciousness is the God consciousness. It speaks to you at times, and you have been fleetingly conscious of it through what you call your intuition. It never obtrudes. It never compels. It only presents, usually in critical moments, flashing but definite feelings of what you should or should not do, which you may or may not have developed the ability to recognize and to act upon for your own good. The universe is trying to give you your good. It always has. Now, are you ready to receive that good? There has to be some eagerness on the part of the recipient. Have you ever tried to give something away to someone that didn't want it? Very, very difficult and not very exciting when it happens. This last week, have you continued to let your imagination tell you everything that you want to do, want to have, want to be? It will. Your secret desires are not very secret. If you'll put a pen in your hand and give your mind permission, it will just amaze you at the concepts that it will bring forth. And have you been categorizing or putting your ideas in clusters or groups that naturally fit together? In other words, are you beginning now the process of organizing your goals in ways that fit naturally into your mind so that you are forming a goal for your whole person, not just isolated goals here and there? But we want to take this whole person that you are forward into total new experiences and to a total new state of being. You see, being comes before doing or having. I must become this thing that I am so that I can do the things that ought to be done by me. And in that process, demonstrate those outer things and experiences that then become my right by virtue of this newly forming and newly awakened consciousness. In the Bible, ideas are called fish. And when the disciples were fishing and caught some fish, that meant that they were inspired. And when they weren't catching fish, that meant they weren't inspired. And the master teacher told them to go out a little farther and drop their nets a little deeper. In other words, to get into the place inside themselves where the fish were, where the ideas were. In this last week, as you've been letting your mind write to you the things that it wants to have, to do, to be, I expect that you've caught some good-sized fish in your mental nets and you've dragged in some fish that you said, gosh, that's too big for me to handle. I think I'll throw it back. I expect you've caught some unusual fish, too. Some things have come to your mind, to your attention, that you really didn't expect. And that's great. If you haven't shocked yourself with the goals that you're setting, then you really aren't doing it very well. It needs to be a shocking experience so that you can break free from your comfort zones and from the self-imposed limitations that have kept you in a static state. I'll bet you've caught some fish that you didn't know were in the lake. In the Bible, the Sea of Galilee, where they were always fishing. Galilee stands for life activity, for energy of life. It stands for the force, you know. The force is with you. The activity of the force is with you. And it means acting in conjunction with substance. And before this lesson is over, we'll be talking about substance, what substance really is. Now, any good fisherman will tell you that you aren't going to be able to keep all of your fish. I have suggested to you that you cast your nets out indiscriminately and pull all of the fish in, but some of them you're going to have to throw away. There are a few carp in there and maybe some goldfish, some ideas that aren't worthy of you. There's some immature fish. They're not long enough to keep. You know what I'm talking about. They're not edible. There's another list that I would like to suggest that you make while you're making lists. Napoleon Hill said that no man has a chance to enjoy permanent success until he begins to look in a mirror for the real cause of his mistakes. To be able to see that the only person that has ever done me in was me. And I strongly suspect that you've taken that action with your mind. But do you know that you cannot become a power in your community, in your own area of responsibility? You cannot achieve enduring success in any worthwhile undertaking, nor can you permanently demonstrate any of your goals until you become big enough to accept personal responsibility for your own mistakes and for your own reverses. And more than that, until you're willing to take a sharp look at yourself to see what it is, if anything, that's going to stand between you and these new goals that you're setting for yourself. For example, suppose that on your list is the goal of acquiring a new position. You enjoy your work. You've done it well. But you've been there for a time, and now you feel like that you should be moving on. Right? Not all of you, but some of you. Stand outside yourself for a moment and look at yourself and see if you would hire you. And if not, why not? Would you want you to work for you? You must become the equivalent of that which you expect. And if you can begin to see some flaws that exist, some chinks in your own armor, write them down. I can promise you that what you see, other people will too, as a matter of fact, more quickly. If by chance one of your goals is to demonstrate a meaningful relationship with a member of the opposite sex, take a searching and fearless look at yourself to see if you were another person, would you marry you? If not, why not? You just aren't going to get anywhere until you become big enough to accept personal responsibility. And if you're not sure, then go to your mastermind group and ask them if they will tell you, and I guarantee you they will. James Fenimore Cooper said, "He who lacks imagination lives but half a life. He has his experience, he has his facts, he has his learning, but do any of these really live unless touched by the magic of imagination? So long as the road is straight, he can see down it and follow it. But imagination looks around the turns and gazes far off into the distance on either side. And it is imagination that walks hand in hand with vision." Now, a part of your creative imagination is to not only set your goals, but to also see the things that's going to keep you from demonstrating those goals and to go to work to correct the defects and shortcomings that stand in your way. You must become the equivalent of the experiences that you seek to have. You cannot have them. You will only be frustrated if you tried to have, to make your outer demonstration, before or in the same movement, the same process of becoming the equivalent of that which you seek. If you're not experiencing the kind of life you desire, it's because your goals have not been clearly defined. Now, you may want more, but you've not given yourself permission to define what more is. What is more? Have you told your mind what more is? Desire is defined as to wish or long for, a request, a petition. Oh God, I desire a good life. Will you please give it to me? I hope, I think. Well, I'm not sure. That is not a desire. The emotion of desire must be turned into a burning feeling of the wish fulfilled. Because if you and I wish to make our demonstration, and you do, and I know you do, then that desire has to become a magnificent emotional obsession that continues to burn day and night, regardless of life's events, regardless of the heavy traffic or the heavy going within the framework of any 24 hours. The word desire comes from the Latin meaning from the stars. It means to shine. It means to investigate. And if you've ever seen someone that was turned on with that feeling of desire, they seem to almost be illumined. Like a star. They do shine. They radiate. There's a vibration that's there. You can see it. You can feel it. You are touched by the magnificence of that deep emotion. Now, the word desire also means from the parent, from the father. And if you have been really working with your mind these past 2 weeks and investigating and writing down your heart's desires, you are in the process of discovering that they are from the stars, from the heavens, from the Father, from your higher self, from your source. There's a deep and vital and eternal urge within each one of us here to move forward and upward to more and better things, and you cannot stop. You may rest for a moment, but you cannot stop. The urge for growth and for movement, for excellence, for joy, for excitement, is inherent in your nature. And it must be released. And the releasing of this urge is not an intellectual experience alone. It begins with the intellect, with the imagination, but it can only continue through the releasing of the emotions. And the very word emotion is from the Latin meaning to move out, to stir up. And every time that you have ever been emotionally on fire, you have moved out into some new experiences. You've stirred some things up. Anger, for example, it's a negative example, will cause someone to move out, and it will stir up the wrong kind of activity. Emotions always do this. Now, when desire is on fire in you, you really will move out into the experiences that your heart has longed for. If we're going to have the experiences that we want, we're going to have to stir up the activity of life. You see, it is possible for you to stir some things up, to take your own mind and cause some things to begin to happen that continue to happen. And then will produce in an effortless way the things that you have simply not had the ability to achieve or to produce on your own. Yesterday I was talking to a teacher who conducts classes like this class on goal setting and achieving and other types of classes. And he said, Jack, why is it that more people don't demonstrate the success that is so readily available to them? For example, he said, sometimes I'll have a class of 40 or 50 students, and maybe only 4 or 5 or six really become achievers, really do something about it. Some of the rest of them will go through the class with some excitement, but they really don't permit the good to happen to them. Why? And I suggested that most people have become static, meaning having no motion, just standing, waiting. Like standing on the corner, watching life pass us by, and hoping that from time to time a little bit of it will stop and rub off on us. In the class this afternoon, I used the analogy of a streetcar named Desire. You remember the play by Tennessee Williams? Well, there actually was and is a streetcar named Desire in New Orleans. In your imagination, you can achieve, you can accomplish anything. I'm going to ask you to take that streetcar named Desire and take it out of New Orleans and put it in San Francisco and let it be one of the cable cars in San Francisco that goes from San Francisco Bay, from the bay, right up the hill to the top of the hill. And you can climb aboard that streetcar named Desire and ride for free all the way to the top. You see, Desire is a vehicle. It's a means of transportation. It is a vehicle that will transport you forward and upward inexorably into new and rewarding and exciting experiences. It will do things for you that cannot possibly be achieved in any other way. And it will take you all the way to Nob Hill. And Nob Hill, imagine that that's the land of your dreams. Nob Hill in San Francisco was originally the posh area in which the wealthiest of San Francisco aristocrats built absolutely magnificent homes. Many of these people had made their fortunes in trading in the Far East. In the Bible, the East, as you probably know, means within yourself. Now, the Far East in which they were trading was in the three-dimensional world. You and I are going to be carrying on our trade with the Far East of ourselves. We're going into the Orient, into the East. Nob Hill was originally Nabob Hill, and a Nabob was a district ruler in India. In time, when the English and Americans began to go to India and become fabulously rich, they too were called Nabobs. And then the people in San Francisco who traded with India and made so much money also lived on Nabob Hill that was shortened to Nob Hill. How would you like to be a Nabob? You probably have never thought of yourself in that way before, but a Nabob is someone who is fabulously rich and has great power, freedom, the ability to make decisions, to walk forth freely into life, to accomplish, to achieve, to create, to build, to live on Nob Hill, the largest and richest residence there. Would you like to be that kind of person? Well, suppose you and I were on a streetcar named Desire that could carry us effortlessly up the steep slopes of adversity through all of the things that have been trying to hold us back. And we would be riding higher and higher, and as we climbed that steep ascent up that hill, you could look out into a new view, a new vista, a new life, new dreams, new dimensions, new experiences. And the higher you would climb, the more you would have the feeling that you are a new person, worthy, adequate, capable, responsible. As you climbed higher and higher, a complete new identity would take place within you. You would leave the low-vaulted past, and in a very short time, you would be in the land of your dreams, except the land of your dreams was not the land of your dreams. It is the reality, the new reality of your life. Would you like that? It can be your experience. Now, the problem with us was that when we got on that vehicle that I'm indicating will transport us to the land of our dreams, that streetcar named Desire. We got off at the first corner. How would you like to be on something that's going to take you all the way, but at the first corner when the conductor stopped and let a little traffic come by, you jumped off and stood on the first corner because you saw your good right there, and there it was, and you embraced it. You see, our low self-concept caused us to stop before we were even started. And that same low self-image can prevent us from getting back on, from really turning our desires loose. Am I really worthy of my good? Don't tell me that someone here hasn't said that to themselves about 50 times this week. Isn't it really selfish to want more than I have? What about this other person in my life? If I truly make my demonstration, I will leave them behind. They aren't doing the things that I'm doing. Do I have the right to dream and to envision? Or my parents have never climbed higher than this. Who am I to think that I can do this? No one in my family has ever done this. Or surely I'm limited by my education or by my age or by my race or by my sex. Well, that's called standing on the corner. And your goals are not going to happen to you standing on the street corner of life. Your demonstration begins with an awakened desire. And so I say, climb aboard and let's get going. Let's really get the feeling going. Let's really get the vibration going now. This is not a lecture. This is an experience. And I'm asking you to let your feelings begin to flow. Actually begin to create in your own inner being a reproduction of how you would feel if you had everything that your heart desires. How would you feel? You see, our present good has become the enemy of the better. And we have to motivate ourselves. We have to actually talk ourselves into reproducing in our minds and in our feelings an equivalent of how we would be, how we would feel if our good had already come. Most people keep looking back over their shoulder or standing where they are, because where you are is the goal that you have demonstrated to this point. And this is being double-minded. Now, you have encountered various trials, haven't you? I assume you have. But do you count it all joy? Are you glad that you did, and have you made your separation from the past? Because if you're still looking back, thinking that somehow your good is back there, or that for some reason you simply can't leave where you are, that's being double-minded. And let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives to all men generously and without reproaching, and it will be given him. But let him ask in faith, with no doubting, for he who doubts is like a wave of the sea that is driven and tossed by the wind. For that person must not suppose that a double-minded man, unstable in all his ways, will receive anything from the Lord. You can't travel in two directions at one time. And this is why that desire is so important, the emotion that's going to move you forward inexorably towards your good, towards your goal. If you are going to turn back, you're double-minded. If you're going to look back, the world's great champion in looking back was Lot's wife. Remember Lot's wife? Who looked back and was double-minded. Lot's wife trying to live where she was, and that condition no longer existed, and was unwilling to move forward into the good, into the actual good that had been created for her to experience. You see, the past does not exist for us. The present is not satisfactory. And so we have to move forward. And desire is the vehicle that's going to get us there. Now, you've learned that everything that man creates or acquires begins in the form of a desire. Desire takes you on the first lap of its journey from the abstract, from the visions of your mind, to the concrete, into the workshop of the imagination. And in the workshop of your imagination, plans for the transition of the abstract into the real are created and organized. Now, you don't have to create or organize. This is something that will happen automatically as the result of this magnificent creative expression that you are, that your mind is. And through some strange and powerful principle of mental chemistry, nature wraps up in the impulse of strong desire that something which recognizes no such word as impossible and accepts no such reality as failure. If you can create a desire strong enough, you don't even have to see your goals clearly yet, because they will then begin to take form and shape. How many times have I seen a patient come through safely and hear his physician say, nothing but his own desire to live saved him. He never would have pulled through if he had not refused to accept the possibility of death. I have seen people live because they had an intense desire to fulfill something in their life that was not completed yet, and they simply would not die until they completed that goal. We've seen it happen. I believe in the power of desire backed by faith, because I have seen that fantastic power lift people from lowly beginnings to places of power and wealth. I've seen it rob the grave of its destined victims. I've seen it serve as the medium by which men stage to come back after having been defeated in 100 or 1,000 different ways. And I have seen it provide me with my own destiny. Let me tell you a story about me. 25 years ago, I came to know within myself that I had to maintain a strong, continuing desire for the good that I wanted to happen to me that had not yet happened. That desire had to be the counterbalance to overcome the negative emotions that had existed in me so long that they were automatic and spontaneous. And so I had to work to desire, to feel, to want the good life, and to believe in it moment by moment by moment. And I worked on this feeling, and it became an obsession, an emotional obsession, a joyous obsession. And my life began to change in the most amazing way. It seemed that every time I connected a goal with that desire, always, whether large or small, that goal would develop as a reality in my life. In 25 years, I cannot recall a single time that this has failed. A particular story that I want to tell you about happened just a few years ago in Dallas. I had made one of the greatest demonstrations of my life, the very finest position that I had ever achieved. A position of some trust and prominence in the city of Dallas, and that's quite a city. I was excited and delighted and was moving forward very successfully in that position. And one Friday, I returned from lunch to discover that that position no longer existed through no fault of my own. Well, for about 10 or 15 seconds, there was an intense feeling of disappointment, of dismay, of wonder, what have I done? And I was told that it was through no fault of mine. But I knew enough to catch the disappointment and to convert the feeling of disappointment to a burning desire for my good, because I worked with my mind and said, this too is good for me. Don't judge by appearances. You will understand if I tell you that for the next 2 or 3 days I had to work very diligently to keep my thoughts and feelings under control. You'll understand that, won't you? This was Friday that the event occurred. Monday evening, I found myself attending a meeting that I would not have attended had not it been for the experience on Friday. And that evening, I met the director of SMRS. And almost instantly, I caught a fish, an idea, I knew what my destiny was going to be. I knew it. He did not know it yet, but I knew it. I saw this as more than a coincidence. Something happened in me. There was a commitment. The idea was totally accepted. I knew that the change that had taken place on Friday was to move me forward into a larger and greater, more exciting and more rewarding destiny. I knew it. And I also knew that this seeming coincidence of meeting the director of SMRS would not have occurred without that burning desire. If I had fallen down into that state of disappointment or dejection or blame, are you with me? Well, the commitment was made and it became a dedication, and I can tell you that from that moment to this, I have never doubted. I have never had one moment of wondering, is this what I'm supposed to be doing? I've never had to look back. My life is so good, I can hardly stand it. I look back and think, you know, that event on Friday might not have happened, and yet it had to happen. The worst things that have ever happened to me have been the best things. From time to time, someone will call me and say, with tears running down their cheeks and sobbing on the telephone, they'll say, I lost my job. And I will say, great. And guess what? Every time it works out that way, all things work together for the good of that person who has a burning desire to demonstrate his good. Do you believe that? I'll guarantee it. I promise it. Dreams come true when desire transforms them into concrete action. Ask this universe for its great gifts, and then desire them, and it will deliver them to you without fail. Now, there is a science of demonstration. There's a science of achieving your goals, and it's an exact science like algebra or arithmetic. There are certain laws which govern the process of acquiring that which you need, and this science does not care who the scientists are. Did you hear that? There's no science. The science of mathematics does not care who the mathematicians are. As long as you follow the rules, you will get the results, as long as you know what you're doing. And the science of demonstrating is the same way. Your demonstrations do not occur because you are a Christian or a Jew or an atheist. They occur because you know what you're doing and do it scientifically. You are a scientist of spirit. You're a spiritual scientist. And if a person does in a certain way that which is supposed to be done, they will experience the result. If they fail to follow the rules, they will not experience the result. And it is just that simple. And no matter how hard you work or how eligible you might seem for your good, unless you work with the right combination, you simply will not make your demonstration. Now, one of the last of our old ideas that we have to get rid of is the idea that there is a God that thinks that the universe will somehow be better off if you are kept poor or in your present state. That somehow you can serve the Lord better in a state of poverty or as things now are. Every desire that you can possibly have is the effort of an unexpressed possibility seeking to come into action in your life. The desire cannot be there. That is a possibility that's trying to happen to you. And it can happen to you in a very important way. There is, in this universe, a mind substance. I'm going to tell you a secret that not everyone here will believe. I hope you do. Right now around you is a substance that I'm going to call mind stuff. Early metaphysicians called it the ethers. It's that substance that you think and feel into. You've come to believe that thinking and feeling causes something to happen, haven't you? Well, there's a very intelligent, an infinitely intelligent substance that is very impersonal. It cannot decide anything for you. It cannot make up your mind for you. It cannot decide where you're going to go or what you're going to do or what you need or what you desire. But when you think into it, and you're always thinking into it, and you're always feeling into it, what you think and feel, it forms and shapes. Your thinking and feeling acts in such a way upon this mind substance as to reproduce the pattern of your thinking and feeling. Now, if you really believe this, it's going to impose a very important responsibility. You'll become aware that every thought you think and every feeling that joins it is actually shaping this mind substance. And this is going to require you to be very responsible, to only think and to feel those things that are consistent with your goals, with your new desires, that you cannot just indiscriminately vacillate back and forth and become angry in traffic, or act in a way that is unseemly when you're with certain people or on the job, that every moment of your existence henceforth, you will be required to maintain a certain posture of your mind, a certain thought. Because throughout every split second of your experience in this universe, you are breathing, thinking, feeling. The posture that you have taken is the reaction that it is giving you. And this is a thinking stuff, mind you, that takes the patterns of your thought and actually reproduces them. Goals should be thought of as already accomplished. Someone asked me to give an explanation of time in goal setting. Should you give specific dates for completion of certain goals? And that's one way of doing it if you wish to work in a three-dimensional way. But there's a better way. And in order to experience the better way, you will need to understand something about the fourth dimension. Our human thinking takes place in the third dimension, in which time exists. And if you're a three-dimensional person only, then you'll have to set a date. But you actually are a fourth-dimensional being, meaning that you transcend the realm of normalcy. And the fourth dimension encompasses and embraces the other three dimensions. But in it, time does not exist, nor space as we know space, nor do conditions. It is unconditioned. It takes your thought, if given out of time. Now, what's the only state that you know of that contains no time? Now. I am in this now moment. If you take your goals, your dreams, and feel them as already accomplished, see them as already done, it's absolutely amazing how that will come to pass. A number of years ago, I was about to buy a boat for my two sons and me, and only to discover that a large business group to which I belonged was raffling a boat and a motor and a trailer. And we decided to use these ideas to see if we could win the boat. We bought about 24 tickets. There were many thousands sold all over the eastern half of the United States. And for about 2 months, as often as I could think about it, would visualize myself in that boat, riding down the lake with the wind blowing by my face. And I could see me and feel me jumping the wakes in that boat. And one day I almost fell out of the boat. It was so vivid that I almost fell out of the boat. And I had the feeling you're going to have to drive that boat more safely than that, Jack. It was a real experience, and I knew that I had to get out of time and into the consciousness of now. I don't have to tell you what happened. We won the boat. The night before the drawing was to take place, I was walking down a Long Beach, Ponte Vedra, Florida. And as the sun came up, I was singing in the top of my mind, Sweet Hour of Prayer. I sing much better in my mind than I do in other words. I wish you could have heard me singing in my mind. And the sun came up, and in that moment I knew that this boat would be called Sweet Hour, and I went back to the motel and told my three sons that it would be called Sweet Hour. That night at the drawing, we won the boat. Now, the feeling of exaltation in having this experience was more important than the boat. 2 years after that, I was at the same meeting, and someone heard the story and said, Jack, can you do that again? They were about to draw for a television set. And the thought occurred to me, well, why haven't I been working on the television set? And she said, if you did it one time, you ought to be able to do it again. Prove it. And I sat there and got the feeling out of time and saw the girl that was pulling the ticket reaching in and pulling one of mine. And that television set is in my office right now. Well, we live in a magnificent universe that responds to our desires and to our now moments of consciousness. You live in a sea of infinite intelligence that will take the form and shape that your consciousness will give it. This week, I want your dreams to come alive. Give them power, joy, desire, excitement, knowing that each and every moment you are breathing into this universal substance and it is responding to you. It has no choice but to respond to you. It does not care who the operator is, does not care who the scientist is, and you are that scientist, and you are reforming and reshaping your world. Next week in our class, I have some exciting secrets that will help you to take the picture that you're drawing. How would you like to take a picture that you draw with your mind and see it actually come alive as a living thing? Would you like that? Well, that's the way it will really be for you.